Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Marvelous Disney, the podcast that discusses the most recent doings at one of the more dynamic divisions of the Walt Disney Company, and that is, of course, Marvel Entertainment. This is entertainment writer Jim Hill, and my co-host, the amazing Aaron Adams, and I are recording this week's episode on Wednesday, May 17th, 2023, which is the day after the upfronts were held at the Javits Center in New York City. That would have been Tuesday, May 16th. And this is the annual presentation to the nation's advertisers. Typically, it's after each of the networks has put together their new fall season, right?
Yeah, that's the general gist of it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And so what they do is they gather all the advertisers together in one place. And normally, it's a big celebrity-driven dog and pony show. In fact, ABC, their upfronts are led by Jimmy Kimmel. But again, we're in the middle of the writer's strike right now. So nobody entertaining who needs to have a writer to be entertaining is getting on stage. Well, anyway, these upfronts were just held in New York City with the idea of getting all of the advertisers to commit hundreds of millions of dollars up front ahead of the new TV season that's being launched in the fall. And Disney was really there mostly to talk up what's going on with streaming, which is a 24/7 operation. So the old rules don't apply. But this being held at the Javits, because, of course, the Javits is the home to New York Comic Con. In fact, this year's New York Comic Con is being held October 12th through the 15th there. And at this year's upfront, Marvel reigns supreme. So did you see the two pieces of news coming out of the upfront?
I don't think I got the right news. I saw ABC releases its writer-proof schedule.
Yeah.
That was a bad piece of news. But I think I'm missing the headlines that you're talking about. Go ahead.
Of course, we've been waiting for some definitive news as to when season two of Loki drops, and we now have that date. It's going to debut on Disney Plus on October 6th. But the big news, actually, was in regard to Echo, which, of course, is the spinoff from the Hawkeye limited series. And we've been hearing over the past year that's been kind of a challenging shoot, a challenging production. So it was kind of intriguing to hear, okay, we finally have a release date for Echo. That's November 29th of this year. But when Kevin Feige went on stage, this is what he said, Aaron. In Hawkeye, fans were first introduced to Maya Lopez, a character played by Alequa Cox. She will be returning to get her revenge in Echo, a limited drama from an incredible team of indigenous writers, directors, and cast members. And for a first for us, all episodes will drop on November 29th.
Ooh.
So that's a different model for Marvel.
I mean, I don't want to be negative. I don't want to be negative right off the bat, but the only math that's making sense to me right now is if it's one of those things where it's a big swing and a big miss. Mm-hmm. If you drop it all at once, you get bad press for one day. If you stretch it out week over week for 8 weeks, man, it's like you're nailing yourself to the cross on that one. That's the only math that I get out of that right now.
I have to admit, given, for example, what's going on right now with Succession over at HBO, and how, you know, every week an episode drops and every Monday people are talking about, you know, what just happened at Succession.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little concerned here. I mean, again, I want to be wrong. And what's kind of interesting is Marvel certainly isn't behaving, at least on the promotion side of things, like this is a show that they have less faith in. I mean, for example, Alequa just got asked, via Instagram, to the effect of, do you plan on appearing at any Comic Cons to hype the show? And it's like, yes, she's going to be at Comic Lollapalooza in Houston on May 27th, tail end of this month. And then Superhero Con in San Antonio, that's July 7th through the 8th. And then finally, I think, Aaron, the Marvel snipers are in a car right now traveling to Ms. Cox Holmes, because she mentioned that she will also be appearing at San Diego Comic-Con on July 22nd. They haven't announced the Comic-Con schedule yet. More to the point...
Well, she didn't say that she was going to be appearing on stage necessarily. Maybe she was just going to be going, playing, dress up as a little My Little Pony character or something and just enjoying the show.
Well, there we go.
Maybe.
Okay. I'm working the math here, however. I look at the schedule and July 22nd is a Saturday. And it's worth noting that last year, when Marvel made its big return to Hall H after sort of sitting San Diego Comic-Con out for D23 and then, of course, the pandemic stuff, they had their big Hall H panel last year on Saturday, July 22nd. So this day is also a Saturday.
Right.
You know, if you're on the fence about San Diego Comic-Con and you're a Marvel fan, this might tip you over the edge. Also hinted at, but not flat out said at the upfronts this week, Ironheart is going to be debuting on Disney Plus in January of next year, 2024. And then Daredevil Born Again will be rolling out on that streaming service in spring of next year. So,
do you remember a little while ago they were kind of pushing back Echo? And then there was this little bit of story about, well, maybe something that happens in Daredevil beforehand would help lead into that story better. And that's not happening now.
Remember, I always mispronounce his name, so you're going to say it for the last part for me. Vincent
D'Onofrio.
Thank you. All right.
Teamwork.
You know, teamwork. Okay. Vincent actually appeared in the teaser reel that they showed us for Echo at the D23 Expo last year. So there is definitely, you know, that he is definitely appearing in both of these projects.
Right. Well, he should be. I mean, you know, she had major beef with him, and last we saw him, she had a gun to his head. So, I mean, they better resolve that somehow. Otherwise, you know, it's going to be a big letdown. One thing that I want to ask, just the general, you know, listening public, their opinion about this is you got a Bob Iger that's overseeing the entire Disney thing, and he says, hey, Kevin Feige, we need less. We got budgets to worry about, so slow down on the content. Instead of, you know, four shows, maybe two or three. And instead of four movies, you know, two or three. And then he said something really stupid like, and we don't need to go back to the well several times with the same character. And it's like, yeah, but Captain America and Iron Man and the core Avengers are the most popular of all of the comic book sellers. They sell the most books. What happens when you end up with something like an Echo, which... It's, you know, definitely geared towards a more specific audience. I hope everybody is able to latch onto it and enjoy it. Same with Ms. Marvel. You know, it's specific in its culture, but I enjoyed the heck out of it. But what happens when you get to these smaller characters and you're like, at some point, you're going to be scraping the bottom of the barrel. And these characters are not bottom of the barrel like Echo and Ms. Marvel. But eventually, if you only visit them twice and then you have to move on, at what point are you like, who the hell is Frogman? Do we need a movie about Frogman? We couldn't have Captain America 6. We needed to go to Frogman.
Well, the way I view it, look, we already know where we're going. We, you know, between the Kang Dynasty and Secret Wars, you know, I mean, we know the path we're headed down. And I understand what Mr. Iger is saying.
At some point, he's going to go, Spider-Man 5, really, guys? Do we need it? And I'm going to be going, yes, we do, as a matter of fact. Like, that is the top tier crown jewel. Why would you throw that away? I mean, Sony's already milking that cow until dust comes out of the udders. Obviously, people can make money off of it. What's your problem with making money off of it?
What kind of intrigues me is, are you familiar with the actress Justine Bateman?
Oh, absolutely. Isn't she doing something like with the... Actually, I think she was reaching out to talk to other actors about AI and how it will be affecting the industry much sooner than you want and how it's going to affect them.
I am so glad you mentioned that because there was a Twitter thread toward this effect. And she was laying out... It's not a question of where theoretically this industry is headed. You know, again, what's interesting about Justine is that she directs now, she writes, you know, she's very well wired into what's going on. And she was talking about where we're headed and one of the reasons why the studio, in fact, that's one of the fears of as to why the Writers Guild strike may hang on for weeks and weeks, if not months and months, because the studios potentially are, you know, there's this giant new revenue stream that they're looking to tap into with AI. And so you read through what she was talking about, right?
Jim, I'm actually freaking living it.
Okay.
When I have a sales guy that for radio commercials, and he says, here are the bullet points I need for a commercial. And he gives me the bullet points, and then he sends it off to another quote-unquote creative company, and he'll get back 10 scripts.
Okay.
And five of them will say, this script was AI generated. And so I'm competing with five living humans and five computers, and I have to beat all of them in order to make a dollar that day. So it's real. It's been around. I've been dealing with it for the last 6 months just in commercial copywriting. I know. Sure. In matter of fact, if you want to, if anyone's a Wes Anderson fan, you know, his films
are very specific.
There are just a slew of AI generated videos right now where it's like Wes Anderson does Lord of the Rings. And it's all the people that, you know, like Owen Wilson is Sauron. You know, and then, but they'll do, you know, Wes Anderson does The Matrix, Wes Anderson does Star Wars, Wes Anderson does, and you can see the familiar elements from each one to each one. It's like, okay, I see how it's being reused, but then it's like what they've really dialed in is the color palette of his films.
Yes.
And the way that the shot is framed, and it's very simple, but it's very symmetrical, and it's very, you know, pretty. And it's like they get, okay, this is what the guy does, and then it spits out a result at the end that is really damn good looking.
It is. It is. But and what's interesting is Justine actually, in her Twitter thread, pointed to these things. She says, because what she talked about as the example is fascinating. What she says is lying over the hill. Okay, you're a Star Wars fan, and you're sitting at home, and you decide you want to see a new Star Wars movie. And so you go to your favorite streaming service and say, I would like to see a new Darth Vader movie, you know, involving these characters. And the AI then goes off and delivers the film you're looking for, you know, with the personally tailored elements. And then, but on the other hand, if you want to pay a little bit more, and you're willing to put your face and voice into the, you can now get the AI can create a film you can appear in. So you can,
I want to be Luke Skywalker.
Yeah. Yes, yes. And so if you extrapolate that, you know, the notion of I want to be Peter Parker, take the, you know, any one of the Spider-Man movies and put me in.
I would be creating the swinging scenes of Spider-Man through the New York skyline, because those are the moments in the movie where I would get goosebumps, and I could feel myself doing that in my fantasy world, right? Those really kind of brought the movie to life in the ways that I got super giddy about. So yeah, I'd be like, make me Spider-Man swinging through New York at sunset during golden hour. And I would like to go by these specific buildings and landmarks.
Don't get me wrong. I'm fascinated by that, but forgive me, folks. That there's also an aspect of that doesn't sound necessarily like entertainment to me. That sounds almost masturbatory. I mean, I you know, I like
wish fulfillment to the fullest extreme. Sure.
Yeah.
But kind of, I almost want to say that's what VR was meant to do. And I don't think VR really took off in the way, because nobody bought the headsets. You have to buy expensive gear, right? And obviously Facebook tried to get it down to a consumer level cost, and they did a really good job with what they did. They really, truly did. But not enough people bought into it. And when not enough people buy into it, the programmers, developers, and filmmakers don't dive into it either, because there's no audience for them.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't work. Now this, where you can say, I would like, and then insert wish fulfillment statement, and then hit enter, and it's there, I think is the thing nobody thought was going to happen, but it just happened so fast. The AI learning went way so very fast that people went, holy shit, this is impressive. Really, truly impressive. And then it just took off because of the public interest. The nerds, you know, when the nerds gather and rally around something, it takes off like wildfire. In the very same way that pornography launched, you know, VHS.
Mm-hmm.
It was a battle of they adopted, and that's where the crowd was. So that's what made the money.
Yeah. And sorry, folks, we've wandered far afield from Marvel again, I mean that. But again, it's a really interesting time news-wise, and toward that end, lots more news to come yet, folks. And as always, the news portion of this week's Marvelous Disney is brought to you by Storybook Destination, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience every time, please book online at StorybookDestinations.com. To now sort of pivot back to Marvel, though, I hate to say this, given what people saw and obviously how enthusiastic they've been about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3. Again, I know you've been traveling this week, so I'm going to assume you didn't get to Guardians Volume 3, so we'll kick the can about talking story about that. But
I would love to hear a review. I mean, if you got one in the can, I'll take it, because I've been waiting. Like, I want to talk about it, but I just haven't had a chance.
Well, again, I want the two of us to be able to chat. Okay. Anyway, from a business point of view, very interesting second weekend at the box office. Business only fell off by 49%, which in the industry, that's called a hold, and that's the best hold for an MCU film in the post-pandemic era. The film made in North America $60.5 million, and that's actually better than the previous two Guardians of the Galaxy films did in their second weekend. They both fell off by 55%. So stateside, ticket sales, $219 million. Overseas, $316 million. So that's a worldwide box office total of $525 million, just 12 days in theaters. Now, put that in perspective, Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania, released to theaters back on February 17th. After 89 days in theaters, that Peyton Reed film had $218 million in North America, $261 overseas. So that's a box office total of $475. That's $50 million less than Guardians Volume 3 current box office total. And while we're throwing numbers around here, just found out today that Quantumania has 2,800 visual effects shots in it, and that's one of the reasons why it was called the most Star Wars-like of the MCU films. Guardians, on the other hand, Volume 3, has over 3,000 visual effects sites. So
neither of them are ever shot on Earth, so in that respect, it's not like you can go, hey, let's go over to the forest over there and grab a pickup shot real quick, or let's just jump in a field and do whatever. It's like, hey, we're in the quantum realm. It's got to look kind of trippy and Jack Kirby-like, and you've got a giant amoeba chasing you through whatever. Yeah, I mean, that's, of course, they're going to have a huge amount of VFX shots.
Well, it's so interesting you bring that up, because we had a MUD listener reach out. I apologize, I'm blanking the name, about Nowhere. The fact that the Nowhere set was so prominently featured, well, in the holiday special as well as Volume 3, and the notion was, Guardians has a really big presence in Epcot and right next to where they built the Cosmic Rewind attraction is the empty Wonders of Life pavilion that originally was supposed to be Disney Play Pavilion, but that project is off the table. And this listener asked, big empty space, Disney seems really heavy and really invested in Nowhere. Why don't they move that in there? Mm-hmm. And it's like, wow, that's an interesting idea. I will bring that up on the show and see if somebody goes for it. Before we finish up on Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, worth noting, just yesterday, it became available for streaming on Disney Plus. And as we mentioned, I think on last week's show, you can now purchase physical copies of it. Though I didn't see any when I was in Target today, so I gotta get
they must have
that.
Sold out, right? Everybody came in a mad rush to get their Ant-Man and Quantumania physical media.
It's been, I want to see, 12 weeks and change since that movie came out in theaters. And it's worth noting that 30 years ago, we had to wait 10 months you know, from the time when Disney's Aladdin debuted in theaters in November of 1992 to the point where you could finally buy a VHS copy, you know, in September of 93. And even then, you had to pay $29, you know, $99, which I think covered, that's 2 months of Disney Plus, right? You know, yeah. So it's, you know, things have changed.
Back in the day, I remember Batman with Michael Keaton coming out. We owned a video store. And so that VHS copy, I want to say, was like $120 per.
Oh, yeah.
And we got a discount to where they were like only $80 because we ordered 100 of them. And yeah, right. And so
well, no. I mean, I'm laughing because I remember. Well, again, if your family owned a video, so you must remember what happened when Star Trek the Motion Picture came out. It was the same thing. It was, you know, like $80 a copy. And but there was this fascinating moment in the industry where they aren't buying it at $80. Okay, let's make it $39. And then to watch how the prices tumbled. Didn't they eventually just settle on like 29? That seemed to be like the sweet spot or
you know, honestly, when that happened, like our business model was kind of built around the price of what people were willing to accept. So we would rent Batman like, you know, 5 million times until the copy was about ready to fall to pieces.
Yep.
And then we would sell that used VHS and it always landed at a $20 price point. It was like just above vinyl, you know, it was CDs were just above that. And and so it seemed like everybody had this like, yeah, I love music. I love movies. I love whatever. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to pay over like $25 to $30 is like it's a little bit much. And 20 seemed to be the sweet spot. And that's kind of where it landed for a bit. And then the higher definition media came out and it was like, oh, you have enough money to upgrade from, you know, 1080 to 4K. That means that you've got enough money to pay the premium. And it was like, we're just going to add an extra $10 on because pixels. So whatever.
I'm sorry. I apologize to the younger members of the audience. Yes, we are talking about prehistoric media formats or that you went to the store. Had to get in the car and physically drive to a place to get something to watch. As home entertainment,
and if you didn't bring it back, we'd charge you by the day an extra nickel like the library.
There you go. Okay. All right. Okay. So we were just talking about how well Guardians is doing at the box office. Sony Pictures Animation, given what's going on with Guardians, has very high hopes for Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse. By the way, on the day this podcast drops, we will be 2 weeks out from the release of this Sony Pictures Animation, the sequel to Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And current tracking suggests that this film will pull in between $70 and $80 million in North America alone. And that's double what the original animated Spider-Man made back in December of 2018. That one, over its opening weekend, pulled in $35 million. And Sony's not the only one looking to cash in on Spidey. Just this week, Disney announced that the company's arena show for preschoolers, Disney Junior Live on Tour, Costume Palooza, will launch in September 1st this year and begin a 60-city tour around North America. And the cast of the show, Aaron, includes Disney Junior favorites like, of course, Mickey, Minnie, Donald, Goofy. But for the first time ever, characters from Marvel's Spidey and His Amazing Friends. You know, again, Disney really getting into that cradle to grave thing.
Oh, I was going to say just September 1st of this year for the launch of that. Sony is really kind of maximizing because they've also got the Spider-Man 2 video game for PlayStation 5 ready to come out. They only say fall of 2023. But you know darn well that it's going to have a Miles Morales Spider-Man and a Peter Parker, and I wouldn't be surprised if there was many animated versions like a Spider-Man 2099, you know, because they reskin the characters real easy to do. But if you've got, you know, Across the Spider-Verse comes out and you've got 1,000 different spider characters, imagine how they can pack the game with different skins and make them collectibles like trading cards.
Again, it's such an interesting time in regard to where Spidey is turning up. Though, here's kind of an interesting bend on the story, though. Universal Studios Japan just announced that it's going to be shutting down its Amazing Spider-Man ride January 22nd of 2024. And that will be exactly 20 years after this attraction opened at that theme park. And all right.
Legal question.
There we go. Okay.
If that closes there, so like the Disney Universal contract is the thing that we're going to have to try and reference to now. And if the thing shuts down, are they able to build a new Marvel thing and keep their rights active? If it's shut down, do they get a chance to rebuild, or is it gone forever? And as soon as Universal shuts down their stuff, then Disney can take it back? Or does none of it matter?
No, a lot to unpack there.
Okay.
Lots of folks in the theme park world are fascinated by this announcement because, first of all, again, after 20 years, they're shutting down the attraction. And typically the way these rights situations work is you initially have a 10-year access to the rights, and then you have 2 5-year renewals.
Okay.
And so it's like, okay, so it looks like they've run through that. But it's, again, the original Amazing Spider-Man opened at Islands of Adventure back in May of 99. And, you know, I just had a good friend at Universal point out that, hey, we just opened a new Marvel-themed, like, snow cone booth. So we still have the rights. We're not giving them up, pal. You know, but it's just sort of the notion of, okay, so the secondary deal, Disney didn't allow them to renew. So that got shut down. This theme park, just like Universal Studios Florida and California, had a Terminator 2 3D Battle Across Time ride that they've also announced is now closed forever. And especially fascinating if you know the layout of Universal Studios Japan. These are in the southeastern corner of the park. There's a souvenir store that basically connects these two. But with these two shutting down, it opens a giant piece of real estate in the New York section of this park. And so it's like, okay, what's going in there? What do they have the rights to? You know, are they going to use? I mean, these days, Universal really, really leans into its own IP. In fact, just today, they dropped news about the work that's being done at Universal Studios Florida across from Despicable Me, Minion Mayhem, that they're going to open a whole Minion land with restaurants and meet and greets and the like. But that opens this summer. So it's like, okay, so what's going into the New York section of Universal Studios Japan? And more to the point, what's the ripple effect of them losing the rights to Spidey in Japan? And is right. this going to come back stateside? So you bring up lots of interesting questions, which I'm trying to get answers to.
Okay.
So we'll bring that up. I'll make some calls. I'll check stuff out. We'll get back to you folks. Other news, we were talking about Captain America New World Order last week, largely in regard to rumors that they're looking at a new title for that. But there've been some photos coming off the set. So we got to see Anthony Mackie, who, of course, plays Sam Wilson, the new Captain America. We got to see him in his new Cap outfit. Likewise, Danny Ramirez, who you may remember, he played the Joaquin Torres character in Falcon and the Winter Soldier, the limited series. He's the one who's going to be the next Falcon. We got to see him on the set, and someone who will be showing up on a set very soon, Chiwetel Ejiofor, who you probably remember played Karl Mordor in the original Doctor Strange, as well as its sequel, Multiverse of Madness. He's just been cast in Venom 3. Brand new character, and this will be for the Spunk, the Sony Pictures Universe of Marvel characters.
Still sounds like something you got to scrape off the bottom of your shoe. Good job, Sony, with the acronym department.
But again, that's Kelly Marcel directing a script that she wrote, so we'll have to wait for some word about who Chiwetel Ejiofor is actually playing. Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaking of casting, have you been paying attention to what our friend Mr. Gunn has been doing over at DC Movies in regard to the Superman Legacy project?
Yeah, I've seen a couple of names bandied about as possible Lois Lanes, but I don't know how much weight to put into any of that. Considering how the whole Fantastic Four thing went, I don't trust anybody with casting news anymore.
Supposedly, they've done physical auditions. In fact, supposedly the last set of tests were submitted on May 4th. So we're almost 2 weeks out from when these tests were done. And to be a fly on the wall, evidently, James has been going around the world, you know, sort of finishing up his responsibility with Marvel Studios. But during that time, he's been getting these tests. You got to wonder, you're outselling Guardians Volume 3. But at the same time, you have your tests for actors coming in for Superman Legacy. And it's like, do you think Chris Pratt got to look in on any of this stuff? Or
no, I think James, I mean, he makes friends with his cast and they all get along very well on set. But I think this is business. And, you know, you kind of have to draw a little tiny line in the sand and be, play your cards really close to your vest. Because if you're just talking to your friends, hey, man, they can't even get a script on set that's not like in different colored pages, so it's you can't photocopy it and stuff like that. So I don't think at this point in the process James is telling anybody anything. I bet he's teasing the heck out of them. Hey, Chris, you wouldn't believe the package I got today. You wouldn't believe who it's from, and it looks fantastic. I mean, my dream Superman could very well be this guy. And oh, by the way, it's not you. You didn't send me a package, did you? No? Okay, good. So that's not embarrassing.
Okay. One little bit of info that has leaked out, that the casting sheet info has gone out to, you know, obviously, you know, various agents and various talent firms around the town. But there is a part that people are auditioning for in this packet called Apex. For those of you who aren't big Superman fans, there is an Apex Lex Luthor, who is the version of, you know, that classic, you know, long-running Superman villain who's actually strong enough to fight Superman. So the fact that, you know, they're casting for an Apex, a lot of folks are like, oh, so that's the Lex we're going to get this time around.
Now you got to say it together. Apex Lex.
Apex Lex. Oh.
No, that doesn't sound ridiculous at all. I am Apex Lex. Rex. Dex. Jex.
All right. Okay. Speaking of casting, on last week's show, we talked a bit about the history of the casting of the original Iron Man. Turns out there's a couple more stories behind that, and also some info to share about how modern MCU films are cast. But first, this. Aaron and I were just comparing notes about what we're reading behind the scenes right now, and I'm not happy about what you're reading. That's kind of disturbing news. Do you want to share with the class?
See, I'm follow Spider-Man. That's usually what pops up in my news feed. So I find it surprising that the headline is that they're going to kill off Ms. Marvel in an Amazing Spider-Man comic. I would think if they're going to make the girl into a sacrificial lamb, they'd do it in her own book. But I would also be more worried about, does this foretell anything for our poor dear Iman Vellani? No, please no. Okay. It's too soon. She's too young. She's just a child. How dare you, cruel, cruel world.
Yeah. And
Stella! I'm sorry. I went the wrong direction there.
Okay. Well, no. I just... Wow, that's an interesting way for Marvel Comics to be going out ahead of the Marvels dropping in November. And
right? Yeah.
That's weird. Okay.
But it gets her in the news. And as we know, sometimes superheroes come back after they die. And some have done it 4, 5, 6 times. I know Spidey's been in his own grave a good 9 or 10 times.
Reboot. Okay.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I'm looking at the cover art for that one, and that is a little concerning. On the other hand, I am reading Tom Hanks's The Making of Another Motion Picture Masterpiece. This came out from Knockin' Off back on May 9th, and it's actually sort of this wonderful, you know, only somebody who has made as many movies as Tom Hanks has made. It takes you behind the scenes on, well, this is why I bring it up, a comic book movie.
Oh, please let it be Cavalier and Clay. have you ever read The Amazing Adventures of Cavalier and Clay?
I know the name.
It's by Michael Chabon. It was a Pulitzer-winning book. And it's about A Jewish kid who escapes World War II comes to America, lives with his cousin. So that's Cavalier and, and Cousin Clay. And the story takes place where he ends up kind of getting into comic book writing. And like Jack Kirby and Stan Lee show up in the story. So it's mixed with our reality just enough where you can factually go, wait a minute, did this really happen? But the end of the story, like there's the things that happen throughout their lives and the things they discover about themselves. But I wept like a baby for hours at the end of that book. It was so like touching and moving, and just it really changes you as a person when you get done reading it. Then it's about the comic book industry, oddly enough, and it's magical.
Wow.
If we have comic book movies that's not a superhero, I would love for that to be adapted one day. It needs to be on a screen somehow because it's a beautiful story.
I know people have enthused to me previous about it. And in fact, I want to say I did see it at one point. Somebody had snagged the film rights, but it, again.
Oh, I got to look that up. Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, I speaking of Mr. Hanks's book, The Making of Another Motion Figure Masterpiece, the names are changed and, you know, the films are changed, but it's only somebody who's been on as many, you know, film sets and high profile projects and effects films as Tom has could write this. And again, it's just, it's a fascinating window into how one does a comic book movie these days, especially given the high stakes, you know, how studios now rely on these films so much for their bottom line. And did you see the Elle Fanning story just this past week? The one she shared on the Happy, Sad, Confused podcast?
Huzzah to Elle for her work on The Great.
Yeah.
And I would say she doesn't need another job except to be Catherine the Great for the next, like, I don't know, 10 more seasons at least.
Well,
until then, no more work for you. Just that.
But here's the thing, you know, in fact, interesting question, why somebody who has a project like that, that she's so acclaimed for working on, you know, why she would even be interested in a comic book movie or a franchise film. And she flat out said, look, I would never say no to those things. I would have a meeting and really talk to see what it was. But you need a balance in your career. And if you want to do your indie work, especially for producing, if you have a big franchise, that does make you breathe better. You know, you know you have some cash flow, so you can do the stuff you love, the stuff you really want to do. If you've got a franchise film, now on the other hand, she says, "I did try out for. I'm not going to say what it was, but I didn't get a part once for something big because it might have not been just this reason, but this was the feedback that I heard." That I didn't have enough Instagram followers at the time. It was for a bigger thing. It was for a franchise thing. She is discreet. She didn't talk about what it was for, but it was a Marvel, a Star Wars, or the like. And I think that's fascinating that that goes into the math, because what's interesting is right now, Elle has, and again, I don't know how many of these she acquired after The Great began airing, but she has 7 million Instagram followers.
I'm going to throw a word at you, Jim. Ready?
Yep.
Here it comes. Moneyball. Right?
Okay.
Looking at numbers, you got to figure out, is this a profitable person? If we make this the little starlet, how many people will we be able to influence? Give me a number, Bob. 7 million. 7 million, that's it? Hey, I was kind of hoping for 10 to 15. Who do we got in the 10 to 15 range, Nancy? Let's see here. Scarlett Johansson's at 30. Now, I can't afford her next. Right? That's the conversation.
A couple of shows back, we were talking about the casting on the original Iron Man and how Sam Rockwell appeared to have a lock on the role of Tony Stark until Robert Downey Jr.'s audition came in. And Jon Favreau was like, that's the guy. I mean, you know, just that he's got the humor, he's damaged. This is what I want for Tony Stark. But as it turns out, Sam and Robert were only in the running after, because the studio, look, just as you just said, you know, studio wanted a star. And so the initial, and it's just, it's fascinating who this originally got offered to. The studio settled on an actor that they were really excited about, and that was Clive Owen. And this story came from Kevin Feige. Feige said he passed. He was not interested. So they turned then and offered the role to Tom Cruise, who also turned it down. And Tom has since talked about why he passed on the role.
Oh, what did he tell Drew Taylor specifically? Go ahead.
You know, someday soon we may actually be able to do this. Okay. But in this interview, he said, as it was lining up, it just didn't feel to me like it was going to work. I need to be able to make decisions and make the film as great as it can be. And it just didn't go down that road that way. So evidently, you know, Mr. Cruise didn't have the control that he wanted. Though, do you remember when Multiverse of Madness was putting together its, you know, its celebrity-heavy council, you know, when they brought back Patrick Stewart and, you know, John Krasinski and that sort of thing? Yep. Do you remember for like 15 minutes they were talking about Tom Cruise's Iron Man, a multiverse Iron Man?
I actually spread false news where someone had like shopped him in or something. It was very, very fake, but it looked really good. Mm-hmm. And I was excited about the idea of Tom Cruise doing that, because when the dude is funny, he is incredibly funny. Like his character in Tropic Thunder, Les Grossman.
There we go.
Oh my God. Yeah. I was just like, I hate you, Tom Cruise, for your talent. You're usually, you know, action star, but you got comedy chops. You can sing, you can dance, mm-hmm. you do it all, you son of a bitch. He's really good. Mm-hmm. And so to have him jump in as Tony Stark, and you know, I think he could do something really unique that obviously Robert Downey Jr. didn't bring to that role, just to make it his own. He's going to want it to be nothing like what Robert did. You know, I want to be my version of Tony Stark. This is what you would have gotten if I would have taken that movie, and y'all would have wished I would have done it. Mm. And I think he would have done great. Too bad he didn't.
Well, but the thing is, again, it's the studio, because remember, this is before Disney has acquired Marvel. So this is Paramount and Marvel Studios. So Marvel Studios is working its list. It's like, well, what other big star could we take this to? So they take it to Leonardo DiCaprio, and he turns it down.
He had too many girls to date at the time. His calendar was booked.
Okay.
Models left and right. Anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead,
list. they take it to Nicolas Cage, who...
Jeez, that's killing me. Go ahead.
Well, but think about it. This is during that same window of time when he was considered for the Scarecrow in the Batman series. Likewise, right. They talked about him being the Green Goblin in the Sam Raimi Spider-Man movies. And, you know, we all know about the Tim Burton Superman project. And he did eventually play a Marvel superhero. We got him as Ghost Rider.
Who knows? I mean, he might end up coming back for Secret Wars if they do that whole, you know.
That's it, exactly.
They got to do that Avengers lineup like they did before. Real quick about Tom Cruise, to back that up real quick.
Yep.
There's got to be a discussion, you know, where they've like, hey, we want to have Tom Cruise do this, and he really wants control, and that's not how we play ball, because, you know, it's our property, and we got to make sure that we do what's right for us, Marvel, mm-hmm. right?
Yep.
But there's got to be someone in that room, and he's like, but Kevin, he jumped a motorcycle off a cliff. Yeah, no, I get it. No, it's a good point. We'll put that one down on the board. That whole Burj Dubai thing. Okay. Two for Tom. And they just run down the things that he's done. It's like, are you sure you don't want to give up just a little bit of creative just to have this? I mean, because he is passionate, and he wants to make the best movie in the world. Mm-hmm. So you know he's not going to stop until he feels he's got it. And so far, his track record is, you know, almost as good as Marvel's. Yeah. That could be a really great partnership if they'd just be willing to give a skosh. And they could just be a side thing that's not really connected right away and just see what happens. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would like to see it. Go ahead.
But again, they work their list. And in fact, one of the more intriguing folks that they went to was Hugh Jackman. And this says a lot about Hugh, that if I, well, no, I do Wolverine. Yeah, this would be a fun character, but I'm already with the X-Men. I'm already over at Fox. I don't think I want to do two of these.
Yeah, that would have been crazy. That would have caused confusion, I think, for the audience.
So it's Robert Downey Jr. by default. You know, after Clive Owen, after Tom Cruise, Nicolas Cage, Leonardo DiCaprio, and Hugh Jackman turned down the part. And even then, it's only after Sam Rockwell seems to have the inside track. And you know, but Robert comes in with that amazing audition. Though we should also mention that one other person is known to have tried out for this part, and that is Deadwood and Justified star Timothy Oliphant.
Uh-oh. Don't tell my wife.
Okay, but here's the thing. He revealed in 2015 that he also auditioned for Iron Man. In fact, he went on to specifically say, a wonderful actor, Robert Downey Jr. and I, screen tested on the exact same day. And I'm still waiting to hear back. I mean, these superhero movies are huge. That could be a real game changer for me. So who's going to break?
Good luck, Oliphant. There we go. No, he's good. He's a lot of fun. I enjoy him a lot, too.
Yeah, so I think that's the last of our Iron Man casting stories. So I've been proven wrong before. So seriously, if you want to get a sense of what it's like to take part in these sort of casting sessions for a high-profile comic book movie, I highly recommend picking up a copy of Tom Hanks's The Making of Another Major Motion Picture. In fact, if the section he's talking about in this book isn't our Scarlett Johansson, I want to know who this is, because so much of it seems to parallel Scarlett's role in the MCU and that sort of thing. But anyway, check that book out. And speaking of checking things out, what is going on with 32nd Street this week, Aaron?
We finally get to release our subliminal advertising episode. So we cover the Ice Cube things, and then we talk about backwards masking of audio. That's Zilla, said the Beatles. Mm-hmm. Paul wasn't dead, by the way.
Nope.
But people believe you can play something backwards and hypnotize people into doing things, where I'm speaking plain English in frontward style and I can't get someone to pass me the pepper. But say it backwards and I'm sure I'll get the pepper much faster. Anyway, that's all I think a crock. We'll discuss why on this coming 32nd Street podcast. Oh, I also had a retraction super last minute. I totally forgot about it. I made a joke last week about the Avengers, or how the cast of Lord of the Rings got tattoos to celebrate, and Avengers are only on a chat. Mm. Turns out they all got tattoos, so I was wrong. Yeah, I was just making a joke, but I was wrong in the joke. So okay. I had to make a correction, and so I have done it. I have upheld my part of the bargain, listener. Thank you for pointing it out, by the way. Go ahead.
There we go. Okay. And always enjoy following on social media, and you're still on the Twitters, right?
Still on the Twitters. It sounds like I had tacos, and I'm still on the Twitters.
Okay.
And if you want to find me, just turn the fan on and type in at Azaprod, AZAPROD. Light a match.
Got it.
I'm on the Twitters.
You're on the Twitters. Okay. Well, we are also still on the Twitters, also on Instagram as Jim Hill Media. Likewise on Facebook is Jim Hill Media News. While we're doing plugs here, I guess I should mention we do have a couple of other podcasts here. We have, of course, Disney Dish that I do with Len Testa. Likewise, we have Fine Tuning that I do with Drew Taylor, who we were just talking about Mr. Cruise and his Mission Impossible movie and the new trailer that just dropped for Dead Reckoning Part 1. And I believe Drew and Charles Hood are going to go to town on that in the next edition of their podcast, Light the Fuse. And sometime in the next couple of days, Brian Gaughan and I will make another run at a looking at Lucasfilm, and lots of Star Wars related news also coming out of the upfronts. Let's see, beyond that, if you could all do Aaron and I a favor, if you get over to Apple Podcasts and rate and recommend, well, again, not just the show you're listening to right now, Marvelous Disney, but also 32nd Street. That would be helpful. And speaking of help, if you really, really, really like what you hear here tonight, if you want to head over to Bandcamp and subscribe, that would be terrific. And I think that's going to do it for this week. So thank you on behalf of Mr. Adams and myself for listening to Marvelous Disney, and we will be back soon.